This is Mitch Gallo, Bill Lee in about 30 minutes after 5 o'clock. Gordon Miller, his final get-together last time he was with us. He started to trend in Montreal on Twitter after suggesting that P.K. Subban is not among the top 15 defensemen in the National Hockey League. And then, a little after 5:30, we'll head to Wimbledon where Milos Raonic made some history today on a couple of fronts into the final against Andy Murray, which we will have for you live on Sunday right here on TSN 690, Sunday at
9 a.m. Eastern.
All right. Last time Ray Ferraro was with us for the season also caused a bit of a stir. You got the best seat in the house, but to the analytics crowd, you know how they feel. They feel that he's been overrated for a few years, that if you go strictly by black and white numbers and analysis, you can rank Shea Weber down around 50th and 70th and 80th among NHL defensemen in certain categories. What do your eyes tell you?
Well, first of all, I would say that anybody that is trying to rate a player through black and white analytics is got no clue. Zero. None. There are players analytically that tell you they're fantastic players. And if you watch the game, you go, that is not a fantastic player. And it's not the player's fault. They didn't make the math up. That's just, you cannot judge on analytics. They cannot tell you the story, totally. They never can, they never have, and they never will. That's my opinion on analytics. You can use them to help you understand what has already happened and be predictive of what can happen. Shea Weber, if you're telling me Shea Weber's the 50th best defenseman in the NHL, God, I hope I'm playing against your team, because I'm going to find a whole pile of defensemen better than the other 49 that you've got listed in front of Shea Weber. Shea Weber is a very, very good defenseman. I don't think he's the best defenseman on Nashville. I think that's Roman Josi, if you're looking at all around 200 feet around the ice. But I think Shea Weber is a very, very good player. I'm astounded that some people have just written him off like he's clinging on to the NHL by his fingertips. I mean, that's ridiculous.
So you are dismissive of data that's out there?
I'm dismissive of using it as the only thing that matters. Underlying numbers are great. They're great. Underlying numbers are, there's lots of other things that are underlying too, including people that are no longer alive. They're underlying the ground. That's what analytics can get you into. If you follow them blindly, my goodness, you don't have a chance.
All right, there's the cue for our next special guest, kind of a regular contributor on Melnick in the Afternoon over the last couple of years. He is a TSN analytics guy. He runs the analytics show in Toronto. Mr. Scott Cullen, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Mitch?
I'm fine. Are those fighting words? You get your arms up when you listen to Ray do his thing like that?
Not really, because honestly, there's a part of me that agrees with, yes, if you just look at, if you look at a guy's Corsi, that's not how you should just be judging a player. But I think where Ray and I would probably differ is that when you look at somebody like Shea Weber's Corsi, and this is why people, are critical, is that you look at Shea Weber's Corsi and you find out that the Nashville Predators tend to outshoot teams when Shea Weber's off the ice. Like they do better with him off the ice in terms of shot differentials, and that's atypical for a top pair defenseman. Every other team's top pair defenseman, they tend to outshoot the other team when their best defensemen are on the ice. And so, to me, then the kind of the next step that you take if you're using analytics is you have to kind of dive in and find out why is that happening with Shea Weber, because you don't want to just rely on that overall shot differential, but you need to find out why that's happening. And I think people have done that in recent years because by the eye test, Shea Weber is still, this 6'4", 230-pound physical menace on the blue line. And, you want to find out why are these results not what we would like them to be. And, you can find out that, Shea Weber doesn't get the puck out of his own zone all that effectively, particularly under control. He can get it out and the other team can regroup in the neutral zone and come back in. But that doesn't, that doesn't look, that's the kind of thing that kind of gets overlooked, when you're evaluating a player, because it's not as though he made this glaring turnover. It's, well, he got the puck out of the zone, the other team came back in, and maybe eventually they scored again. But it's not this kind of direct leading to a goal. And so I think that's that's kind of the position I take on it. I also agree with Ray too that, like, I don't think Shea Weber is the 50th best defenseman in the league. I think he's better than that. But I think, you know, he probably falls somewhere in between the Team Canada naming him to the World Cup team immediately and the 50th defenseman in the league. He probably falls somewhere in between there.
Would you rather have, and by the we're Gord Miller, as I mentioned, he's coming on after 5 o'clock, and he threw us for a loop when we were talking for the first time in the aftermath of the trade, that he doesn't think P.K. Subban is in the top 15 of defensemen in the National Hockey League. And surely there are people around the NHL who share Gord's view. I don't know how many of them there are, but there are some. Where would you put Subban?
Top five, maybe top three. Like, I completely disagree with that. I remember, you know, like, Gord tweeted that out later that afternoon about that. And I just, I think what happens, and look, hockey is notoriously conservative in how they evaluate things. But I think that hockey people might see, you know, a turnover from Subban that leads to a goal, and then they just, you know, that's it for them. That is, you know, how they evaluate. And it's like, but look at all these other times that he got the puck out of the zone into the other team's zone. Look at all the offense that he creates. Like, you have to take all of it into account. You can't just take this one play. And look, PK had, you know, a number of plays where he make this terrible turnover, it leads to a goal, and you go, okay, well, that's one play. You have to take, you know, so many more plays into account. And to me, Subban is one of the top, you know, five defensemen in the league. And then I think with a comparison right now, I'll even, you know, because there are GMs in the league who I'm sure place Weber above Subban, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that if they really want to, you know, say that Weber is better today, that's fine. I think when you're evaluating the trade, I think you're crazy if you think that you're going to get more value from Shea Weber at age 31 through age 40 or however long he decides to play, compared to what you're going to get out of PK Subban from age 27 to 32. Like, I think the age is really one of the deciding factors on this deal.
So when you look at the Montreal Canadiens specifically and the way their blue line is right now with Shea Weber instead of PK Subban, to your point about not moving the puck nearly as well as PK, big man, they got Carey Price. They don't want to see Carey Price go down, so, you know, they want to maybe protect him a little bit better. They've got character issues. The guy's worn a C for forever. I get that. I get all of that. But surely they cannot hope to compete deep into the playoffs with the defense the way it is now compared to the way it is a year ago. Would that be fair?
Well, I think they might hope that. I don't think it's necessarily the right strategy. And they're going to have to find a way. Like, whoever they partner with Weber, they have to hope that that's somebody who can get the puck out of the zone under control. Like, well, Weber, you know, has even had these negative possession numbers while playing with Roman Josi, who's quite good at moving the puck out of his zone. And so the challenge is on Montreal to who do you pair with Weber and still end up, you know, moving the puck out of the zone under control and going the right way. And I'm not sure who I see it. Like, I might say Jeff Petrie, but he's another right shot defenseman, and so I don't necessarily see them as ideal partners there. So I think that is kind of one of the challenges they face. They have, and maybe, as you're alluding to, maybe they still need to make another change to upgrade on the blue line to really, have a unit that you can be happy with. And it, I'll give Weber kind of one bit of credit, and as he and Josi have had these poor possession numbers kind of over the past few years, you can mitigate against that a little bit in that they've tended to allow lower quality shots, and then depending on which various sites you use, you can check like expected goals or high danger scoring chances, and they've tended to be a little bit lower with those guys, and so that does make their results maybe not quite as bad as you might think. But at the same time, if you start playing the shot quality game, like, that's really risky. You know, it's not as statistically reliable as the shot quantity game, and so that's why people are still so critical of Weber. Even though, the recent results, maybe aren't quite as bad as you might think.
With Scott Cullen of TSN Analytics, TSN.ca, and Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. Is there another high-profile player, star-caliber player or players, who are viewed the same way as Weber. The reason we're having this discussion is that the hockey people think Shea Weber is tremendous, and the analytics community is less than enthused. Is there somebody else in that category?
Well, I think in and I wouldn't go to kind of the extremes on this, but if you looked at this year's Norris Trophy debate, the Erik Karlsson versus Drew Doughty thing, that you have so many people who, you know, Erik Karlsson doesn't play defense and so on and so forth, but, you know, Ottawa's results were vastly better with Erik Karlsson on the ice. And, you know, he was dragging a team that didn't have a whole ton of talent to these good results when he was on the ice, whereas Drew Doughty, praised far and wide for being this great all-around defenseman, except in terms of all-around, you know, Drew Doughty didn't produce much offensively. Like at even strength this year, Drew Doughty was producing like a journeyman defenseman. And so there are always these kinds of contrasts, but that's one that kind of sticks out. You wouldn't get any hockey people to argue against Drew Doughty. You know, that Drew Doughty is held in such high regard. Even though you can look at his overall numbers and they can be very good, but I think, you know, when you compare them, say, to Erik Karlsson this year, Karlsson had a stronger case for the Norris, and yet he still didn't win.
Hey, Scott, we threw this around the other day. Back in 2012, when Marc Bergevin was hired by the Canadiens, granted, Montrealers were collectively anxious for some cleansing, so to speak, after what was a very difficult time period. But we saw Bergevin, and we didn't know a ton about him aside from what was out there, but we saw Bergevin as embracing a bit of the new school, as a more modern, a more progressive type of general manager. Going back and looking at what's happened over the last 4 years, do you think that still sticks to him, or is he becoming more of the so-called conservative old-school hockey type?
Well, from the outside, it looks like he's sort of backing his coach, who his coach really seems to be very old school conservative, and the one thing that they've really kind of decided to do is that they're going to make this team tougher, and look, by adding Shea Weber, you've made your team tougher. I mean, there's not a team in the league that would add Shea Weber and not be a tougher team. And look, Andrew Shaw may not be big, but he's tough, and so you've got guys who add that element to your team, and this is like, even when I broke down the Shaw for Eller trade, I don't think that Andrew Shaw is necessarily a better player than Lars Eller, but he's definitely a different player. You know, the style of game that you're going to see from Andrew Shaw is not the same as you get from Eller, and so while I'm not sure the overall results are going to be any better because of that, I think that's stylistically, this is certainly more along the lines of what Michel Therrien wants. And so the way, you know, I see it is that Bergevin is just sort of falling alongside there, going, okay, I back this idea with the coach that we want our team to be a tough team, and that's how we're going to do it. And now the interesting thing about this is NHL teams do this all the time. When they don't win in the playoffs, they go out and get tougher all summer. But then you start looking back, and you know, Pittsburgh wins the Stanley Cup. They're not terribly tough. Chicago's been winning a bunch of Stanley Cups. They're not a team loaded up with size or toughness. And so sometimes you might want to reconsider that toughness isn't necessarily the reason why teams aren't winning.
But you can also argue that there is a certain amount of grit that you need to last all the way to June as a team, right?
Of course.
And the Canadians must have felt that they don't even have enough to last till April. With Scott Cullen on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690, Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, and Mitch Gallo.
Okay, Scott, so you said you had P.K. Subban top five, maybe as high as three. I'm going to assume you have Karlsson and Brent Burns as one and two. Now, looking at Subban at three, how do you view Roman Josi? And can the pairing of Subban and Josi vault P.K. to be a number one defenseman in the league?
Oh, quite possibly. I think, Josi to me is maybe a top 10 defenseman. And that's, I don't necessarily have a running list all the time, but that's kind of ballpark where I consider him. And part of it is we don't really know what he is without Shea Weber. You know, and I might find out that, wow, Roman Josi without Shea Weber is even better than I thought. But I guess we'll have to kind of see how that goes. But I think that the pairing out, if Josi and Subban end up together, I think that's that's going to be a really tough pairing for teams to contain, because they're just going to consistently be able to get the puck out of the zone. And this is the trade-off that goes with, okay, you get the big physical defenseman who can clear the front of the net and keep people away from your goalie. Is that better than the defenseman who just gets the puck when it comes into the zone and turns it around quickly the other way? It may not evoke the images of the big tough defensemen of the past, but I think the more effective defensemen these days are the ones who just make sure that it gets out of their zone quickly. And then so that's like, I think that Josi and Subban could be, they could be the best pairing in the league theoretically.
Yeah, there's no way on the surface Weber can be paired with a 37-year-old Andre Markov who's slowing down considerably. But so, and that's why a lot of us believe, all right, the Subban, I don't like the trade for reasons you've outlined here. I don't like it on the surface. I have nothing against Shea Weber, but I don't like the fact that they traded PK Subban at this age. That's a whole other element. Do the analytics community, do they totally dismiss chemistry, personality, how that can lend itself to a team performing better if everybody's on the same page as opposed to some guys pulling in different directions?
I don't think they dismiss it. I think the bigger issue is they think people are poor judges of it. I'm sitting here in Toronto. This is a team that has been going spending money on free agents in the summer for years based on the character that they're going to add to the team. And, and David Clarkson and Colby Armstrong and Mike Komisarek and Colton Orr, no one ever had a complaint about the character of those guys. They're good guys and good teammates. But they weren't worth the money that they got in free agency because, those qualities didn't help the team get any better. And so that's the challenge that teams face is, if you think that having Shea Weber is going to have this intangible benefit that we can't measure of, the putting everybody on the same page and being a strong character guy, well, you have to hope that you've kind of judged that right. And because the tangible numbers aren't really in your favor. And look, there are plenty of times that teams are going to make that choice because they like the style of play or like that kind of player. But when you start, basing it on something that is kind of intangible like that, you're running the risk that maybe you just didn't evaluate it properly in the first place.
Finishing up with Scott Cullen of TSN on Melnick in the afternoon. So back to my belief that Shea Weber will be paired with someone other than Andre Markov, whether it's someone in-house right now or it's a trade or via free agency. You keep hearing Chris Russell's name, and the Leafs are another team that's reportedly in on Chris Russell, another player that the analytics community gives a big thumbs down to. What are his issues?
The issue with Chris Russell is he gets buried in his defensive zone a lot. And the thing is, when you watch Chris Russell play, he has these admirable qualities. He's not a huge guy, but he can skate well, and he's pretty courageous. He blocks shots like crazy, and he'll play a physical game for his size. But the fact is, his team just is consistently outshot when he's on the ice, and I think the issue isn't so much that Chris Russell can't be an NHL defenseman, it's that, he got grossly overplayed in Calgary, playing 23 and 24 minutes a game, and that's kind of way too much for his skill level. And so then when he got traded to Dallas at the deadline, the analytics people were, this is a bad idea for a team that really has high playoff hopes, and that sort of kind of played out, that Russell wasn't very good for them in the playoffs. And I don't know kind of what's happened here with free agency, either whether teams have backed off, because of, some reliance on analytics, or whether maybe Russell kind of overshot his mark when he was looking for a contract, and, teams have kind of been forced to reevaluate a bit. But, if I was Montreal and I had to kind of pick a partner for Weber, I might take Nathan Beaulieu and give him a shot at it before I'd invest any kind of long-term money in Chris Russell.
There's 230 defensemen in the NHL, roughly, give or take, and PK is probably in that range of 15 to 20.
But 15 to 20?
For most hockey people, he's not in the top dozen defensemen in the NHL.
That was like my second holy spit moment of the week after the trade. Gord Miller's coming up at 5:05. Scott Cullen, always a treat talking to you. Fascinating conversation. Have yourself a terrific summer.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. We think Bill Lee's back in Craftsbury after taking part in pitch talks last night at the theater in downtown Boston with Joni Cara and some other people. And don't forget the season-ending wrap-up award-winning edition of You Got Censored before 5. And then Gord will join us. See if he starts trending again in Montreal on Twitter. And then Tom Tebbit at Wimbledon on Milos and Andy Murray in the final on Sunday, which will be heard live right here on TSN 690. Tom's coming up after 5:30 on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.
Get to know Mitsubishi. Get to know where it's from and where you can get one.
Finding directions to...